what you find at hawker centres, which I think is really, really rare and unique, is actually like a super diverse socioeconomic mix of families. And it's incredibly nostalgic and it's totally a family tradition, regardless of how wealthy you are. So that's kind of, I think, one of the best things about it. It's like a bit of a normalizer in society.
Today on Dirty Linen's summer series, we are continuing to talk to fun food people about some of their memorable meals. Today, we are chatting to Kim Teo, the founder of Mr. Yum. I've been so excited to watch Mr. Yum go from strength to strength, especially over the past couple of years. It's an awesome Aussie startup, female founder, and I'm super excited to have Kim with me today. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Danny. Thank you for having me.
It's really good to have you here. Every time I use Mr. Yum, you know, order, pay using your platform, I just get a little thrill from just thinking about just how well you're doing. It's so awesome.
Really appreciate that. It's definitely been a bit of a big year.
Yeah, well, good for you. So let's celebrate by you telling me and the listeners about some of your most memorable meals. What have you got for me?
I had a think back to a childhood one. I grew up in Singapore for many years before moving to Australia. And one of my childhood memories around that is satay sticks at a hawker center we used to get watermelon juice when we were kids. I think that's super nostalgic and something that I can't replicate at home. So that's definitely one for me. And then the second one was, we're in Collingwood and we've got a really awesome restaurant right by us called Congress. And I find them just to be like one of the best examples of what kind of food VIP experiences feel like. Obviously, like, we live right there and so we're there all the time, and it genuinely feels like we've gotten to know all the staff and that they continue to remember who we are. So the kangaroo pastrami there is probably my favorite thing, and it's something that I've never been able to find anywhere else, so kudos to them. And then the third one, I think, is just how well Melbourne does natural wines. You know, we got on that trend probably 3 years ago now, and it's been growing and growing. And then I've traveled kind of LA and London a lot this year, and I've been terribly disappointed. Probably, like, you could go and find a natural wine shop, but, you know, you'd have to go specifically looking for it, as opposed to it just being on every single wine list like it is in Melbourne. So that would be my third one.
Ah, amazing. Well, I want to have a little bit of a dive into each of those, and yeah, so excited to do so because, yeah, I love the sound of all of those things. So let's go to Singapore and talk more about hawker food. I mean, the hawker centres in Singapore are such a phenomenon. I suppose, you know, there's all different styles of them. I guess it's a bit different to some of the other Asian street food, which is a bit more, I guess, organic and out on the street. I guess Singapore's, you know, made that effort to make it a bit more, I guess, regulated. But the hawker centres have just got their own rhythm and life and such incredible food, hey?
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's one of the places in the world where you can actually get, like, really good quality food for quite a low price point as well. And so what you find at hawker centres, which I think is really, really rare and unique, is actually like a super diverse socioeconomic mix of families, because it's not like the, you know, super wealthy family is not going to a hawker centre, because it's impossible to find that food outside of a hawker center, and it's incredibly nostalgic and it's totally a family tradition, regardless of how wealthy you are. So that's kind of, I think, one of the best things about it. It's like a bit of a normalizer in society.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's such a great angle on it. And I think one thing I love about it as well is that you get people who are specialist in one thing. Like, they just do this one thing. They do it every day. They do it amazingly. And there's just a real sense of pride, isn't there?
Yeah, for sure. Like, you definitely walk past some hawker stores and most of them will be run by some level of family. And often, like, the grandma or grandpa is like on the, you know, on the walk, and the art, like the art that they've created, they don't have a recipe of course, and they don't really know how to explain the exact way and method that they do it, but the way that they do it is quite difficult to replicate. So yeah, you're right. It's like doing the same thing on repetition, probably more than 10,000 times.
What do you reckon makes a good satay?
There's like definitely elements of the coal and how hot the coal is and how charred or burnt the satay is, to like almost like crispy, but not like to the point where you think you're going to get cancer eating it. So I think there's definitely like the perfect char, and then of course there's like the flavor of the meat, but I think the one that's actually the most important is like the quality of the peanut sauce that comes with it. Sometimes it's like super gluggy and a bit weird, and other times it's like a perfect kind of consistency that's very nutty but not overly gluggy. So yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, but few components to that dish, I think, that like I would never ever be able to replicate that.
And tell me about the watermelon juice, because I don't really know about the culture around that. Is that like something that, you know, kids always have at hawker centers? Like, what's the deal there?
Yeah, there's always a fruit juice shop, and often they'll sell like sugarcane juice. I'm not sure if you've seen, but like they put the sugarcane through like this big metal rolling device. Yeah, so you can get the sugarcane juice with like a squeeze of lemon, and that's really good. But we used to get the watermelon juice, and it's like $2 for like this massive, almost like the kind of cup that you would get at the cinema type vibe, and it's a really big glass, and it's like $2. I guess watermelon juice is quite like, watermelons are really juicy, so you can get a lot out of a watermelon, as opposed to like how many oranges you might have to squeeze, or how many, you know, other fruits you'd have to go through to make a juice. So I think it's just one of the like more cheaply made juices that you can sell for like a low price, but it's yummy and tropical.
Yeah, watermelons are juice ready. they're just ready to be squeezed. Okay, well, that has been great to have a little trip to Singapore with you, but I am super happy to go back to Collingwood to talk about Congress. So I am not living close to Congress. I'm on the other side of town, but when I've been there, I totally get that neighbourhood feeling. And it I think, you know, there's this sense, well, I suppose over the last, you know, 15 or 20 years, it feels like every apartment development has to have a cafe or a restaurant underneath. And often they are extremely disappointing, and they don't really jive with the development itself or the neighborhood. They're just very cookie cutter. But I think Congress is an amazing example of a restaurant that gels with its community, and, you know, it's really welcoming to, you know, outsiders like me who, you know, stumble in there. But I just think it must be so nice to, you know, have it as that everyone knows your name kind of place.
Yeah, it's like the perfect size as well. It's not too big a restaurant that you need people from out of the local neighborhood to come to like fill the space. I think it's got like a really sweet amount of room in there. And then the interesting thing is it's on Wellington Street, which is like one back from Smith Street. And I think that restaurant would feel a little bit out of place on Smith Street. But Wellington Street has become like the more high-end version of Smith Street. So it's like just one street back and a little bit less grungy and a bit more gentrified, and definitely like the new Gurner apartments are going up there, and they're pretty expensive. And so it's actually like, I feel like Congress came at the perfect time to create the probably more high-end version of Smith Street, and things that are popping up around it are of the same nature and of the same type. So it's almost like they've come in and they've set a trend for what's going to be the kind of food and quality of service and stuff that's happening in Collingwood. So not that the restaurants on Smith Street aren't great, but they're definitely like more more fast casual than they are, you know, fine dining.
That's so interesting. It's like, I guess what you're sort of identifying is the ability of a city like Melbourne to support micro neighbourhoods, and that, you know, things can just really shift and move in a really small geographical zone. You can have these different kind of waves of dining styles. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Like today, actually, in our apartment, right under our building, Smith and Daughters and Smith and Deli just opened up today. And it's like you can pretty much see Congress from Smith and Daughters. So it's like, it's, you know, another great brand is moving into the neighborhood. The quality of the produce they've got at the deli is clearly, like, you know, leveling up from what other parts of Collingwood might be. So yeah, it's super interesting. It's like they're starting to move in, and Smith and Daughters will start to bring other restaurants and great brands to the local little micro neighbourhood.
Yeah, that's really so fascinating. I'm so excited to check out the new Smith and Deli and Smith and Daughters. It's just, yeah, really exciting watching Shannon Martinez just, I guess, reposition vegan food. It's really thrilling. And just to be a little bit less vegan for a moment, I just also want to shout out to the pig's head sandwich at Congress, which is one of their signatures. And just, even as I say those words, I kind of feel like the juice of that croquette just like running down my arms all the way to my elbows.
It's insanely, and it's so juicy that they have to like warn you before you take a bite into it that it's going to explode.
Yep. But it's good. It's a good explosion. So yeah, shout out to Zach Tinsley, who's the chef there. It's a really, really cool place. Okay. And I mean, Congress is one place that you can get interesting wine, but tell me what it is about natural wine that excites you, Kim.
This is going to sound probably a little bit more boring than a normal reason, but because I'm Asian, I often get pretty red when I drink alcohol that's got that is quite like filtered and not. It's almost like the processing of the wine has some kind of sulfates that I don't really mix well with. And I met someone like 3 years ago, an Asian guy, and he was telling me that that he doesn't have the same effect when he drinks natural wine, and I was like, oh my god, what is this thing? So I just started getting into it and really enjoyed it, and now, like, you know, a normal Pinot Gris feels a little bit boring, and have just like enjoyed seeing how it's gone from, oh, you can find it at certain places, to it's, you know, nearly on the menu at most restaurants. And I bet it's going to, like, even end up on the menu in a pub soon. Like, it's just becoming so much part of our everyday drinking. It's, like, probably going to get fairly mainstream to the point it shows up in a pub.
Yeah, that's a good call. But does it, I mean, physiologically, does it work better for you?
It works so much better. I can drink, like, yeah, I can drink it like a normal person.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think, I mean, my view on it is that natural wine has reined itself in. Like, I think when we first started seeing it around the place, it could be pretty, like, extreme. Whereas I think now it's like, I don't know if it's the winemakers have played enough with it to rein it in a bit more. Like, it's a bit more controlled. So I think perhaps that helps it become, yeah, a bit more mainstream.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely like found a middle ground, and you can still get like the overly funky stuff. But if you want to have a wine with a meal, then you can, you know, have a few glasses of pretty controlled varieties.
Yeah, and maybe it's also as sommeliers and other service staff have had more exposure to it, they're able to guide us as diners a bit more. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because yeah, I would, if I'm somewhere that I feel like comfortable, I will totally trust any wine that anyone wants to put in front of me. You know, like, it's just a great, when you have that trusting relationship with a sommelier, then it's just the best thing to be introduced to new things.
For sure. It's definitely like it's hard to get to know everyone, and half the time you forget what you're drinking. So, yeah, hardly ever goes wrong as well. So definitely trust them.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, well, Kim, this has been amazing. I have really enjoyed coming on the memorable meal journey with you. Thank you so much for sharing some of your faves with Dirty Linen today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good one. Bye.
This is Dirty Linen and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta at Dirty Linen Podcast. We can't wait to hear from you.